these married couple groups, they're formed based on about five couples. We still have a few spots open in Jewel and Solomon's group, but these couples meet weekly. We go through a discussion book, and we kind of discuss just married life, family life. How is this week going? What were some struggles that you had this week? Where did God show up really big? And it's just a wonderful way to support each other and our families and our children and our chaotic craziness that we all just experienced. That it's just wonderful because you're walking through life together. And it's a great way to grow together as a couple, grow together as a family, and grow together as a community so that we can go out and serve the rest of the world better. All right, so with that, I'd like to come in. I'd like to introduce our founders, our main speakers, our special guests for this evening. Peter and Teresa have come all the way from the great state, cold state of Wisconsin this evening, and they are here to talk to us about the John Paul II, the love he showed for all of us, and the love he wanted to show the church. Let's give a big round of applause.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Hey, Cedar Rapids. I think this is the first time I've stopped in Cedar Rapids, so.
Yeah.
We drive through because I'm from New Orleans, so you'll get the southern flair coming out. Pete is a Wisconsin farm boy, but I'm from New Orleans, so we drive down south once a year, pass you by, so we are Peter and Teresa Martin, and a little bit more kind of background about us. Is that where you wanted to go? Okay. So So we've been married 23 years, and when we first started our marriage, we really believed that God wanted us to put our marriage at the service of the church and to serve married couples. So we went to Rome, Italy, and studied for 4 years there. And in the last year, I was pregnant with our oldest son, Gregory, who's now 19. So that shows you, dates us a little bit. But I had complications with that pregnancy, and I wasn't able to finish the term. We had to come back soon. So, we had complications, and they actually didn't even want me to fly. This German doctor, I was going into labor at 28 weeks. And that next, so I had to go on complete bed rest. And during that next week, St. John Paul II died. That was in 2005. And all of our friends were praying for us in the Piazza San Pietro. And we feel like that was his first miracle because I went back, the contractions had stopped, the mucus plug had reformed, which is unheard of, and they let me fly. But all that to say, I wasn't able to continue. I got stuck in between.
So we had this dream. We felt like God had called us to do service in the church, in particular in the area of marriage and family, and we were going to do so together. So that's why we went to Rome. However, I had credits that Teresa didn't have, so we were a year behind. I was a year ahead. She was behind schedule because she had to do some philosophy credits. Anyway, the sad part of that story is that I was able to finish, but she was kind of stuck. She couldn't get anything out of those 3.5 years because all those credits were European and they don't transfer, and so
ridiculous.
She got to live in Rome and she got the knowledge and everything, but she didn't get the degree. And this idea that we would work together was just, it seemed like it wasn't happening, because once we started the family, we started the family. And Gregory was born in 2005, and then Louis came, and Leonardo, and all. So we just kept having babies, so the youngest one this year is 4, Gregory's 19. Well, God, again, put this on our heart that we would be at service of the church in the area of marriage and family together. And it was, I think, 2015 when we started looking at finances and looking at where we were and said, you know, maybe now's a good time for you to go and pursue your master's degree.
So you're getting our background here, because it is relevant. So I went through Maryville Institute, which is in England, but it's a remote study. I didn't abandon my family. So it's a remote study, so I did most of my studies between like midnight and 3 a.m. when everybody else was sleeping, because I do homeschool the kids who live out in the country, which is fantastic. I love it, very peaceful. But anyway, so when it got time to do my dissertation, the woman who was in charge, the director of the dissertation, she said, do you have any idea what you want to do? And I said, no, not really. I mean, there's so much good stuff, you know, like I just didn't know where to. And she said, I know exactly what you need to do. And she went over to the bookshelf, she got this book, and she handed it to me, and she said, this has been waiting for you. And it was a book in Italian, but we had learned Italian when we were studying there. And she said, in this, there are new documents. One of them is a rule that St. John Paul II himself wrote when he was cardinal for his people, right after Humanae Vitae was promulgated. You can do something with this. And she's a laywoman. She worked for the church, worked in catechesis her whole life. She's like, I can't access it, but you can. So we used it. I used it for my dissertation. Once I graduated, like, and the whole time I'm telling Pete, who got his license, STL from the JP2 Institute, in Rome and then in D.C. And he works as a marriage director for our Diocese of Winona, Rochester, Minnesota. And I'm like, can you believe he said this? I'm like going through all this stuff. Can you believe he said this? And like things like the spouses can be so spiritually united because of the grace of the sacrament of marriage that they have one interior life, that they can share one interior life. Like, that's mind-blowing. He also said that through the grace of the sacrament of marriage. So you know when you get married, technically you are the ministers of the sacrament to each other, right? So we were the theology nerds who were like, no, Father Smith didn't marry you. You married each other, you know. But it goes beyond that, which is so cool that I had no idea. So like we were those people, right? But JP2 says that act of giving the sacrament to each other, it doesn't stop at the altar. So for the rest of your life, you are the conduit of the action of God, of that grace of God in your spouse's life. As long as you keep yourself a pure conduit, right? But you are the conduit of the action of God in your spouse's life. So these things were like blowing my mind. So once I graduated, then the Holy Spirit started aggravating us.
And so Trace is telling me all this, and I kind of learned a little bit about this rule. It was translated in like 2009, and it hit the airwaves, and I was already a marriage and family life director, and there was talk amongst all the directors that, oh, did you hear about this? It was translated into Italian, and I think we were all just expecting that it would finally come out. Somebody would grab a hold of it. I went to the JP2 Institute in Washington, D.C. It's the only one in the United States. So I just assumed that those professors would grab a hold of it and translate it. And so when Teresa finished her dissertation and she had already translated it herself, I said, you know, at minimum, we should at least do this. Like, as far as we know, nobody's done this. So we read the rule, understood the rule, sort of, didn't know exactly how we were going to live it out, but knew that somebody has to do it. JP2 is a genius, and it's probably going to be good, but we just baby steps. So we started a group, and lo and behold, everyone in the group was like, what the heck, this is amazing. This can't just be here. We've got to duplicate this. We've got to do something with it. So that's how the WCI was created, because we said, all right, we need to have like an organization that helps to disseminate the rule, and thankfully, the Holy Spirit obviously wants this to happen, because it's just a series of things that happened that made the book possible, and then people just, honestly, to this day, so Damien's the one taking pictures, the poor kid was in the hospital with scarlet fever.
When the book was like officially published,
almost 2 years ago, he was in the hospital, and Teresa was there with her laptop saying, all right, it's now published.
So it's launched now.
And then from that day on, the Holy Spirit has just called people to us. It's just, we're kind of the organization, and we'd love to just send it out to the world, but the reality is that they're coming to us. So Amanda and Eric probably have a story of how they heard about us through a podcast. And that's really how the message is going out at this point. But the beautiful thing is that these married couple groups are finding that it is amazing, and it's changing their marriage, and it's changing their whole family's lives.
And so even the whole process of that was crazy, too, because we had to get, first of all, we had to get the original Polish, because we didn't want the translation to be, like, walked through the Italian. We wanted a direct Polish to English translation, so that's what's in the book. And that was just, this Polish priest said, sure, here you go. He sent me all the originals from all this collection of works, like, without even hesitation, once I told him what we were doing. And then we had to get Vatican approval. And this was in 2020, so everything was shut down and everything was crazy, and people told us there is no way that the Vatican's going to approve a nobody, like, translating JP2's works and whatnot. So, and we got turned down from publisher after publisher after publisher, and one of them even said, the JP2 market's tapped out. Nobody wants to read JP2 anymore. And then that's when I heard Mother Angelica's voice in my head. She's like, yeah, I love her. But anyways, do it yourself, sweetheart. Okay, I don't know what I'm doing, but okay. And yeah, so anyway, in the Vatican, though, like, I wrote the message in Italian, like, trying to, you get on the good side, right? And he's like, well, we're going to have to take a percentage because it's the Pope's words, and the Vatican owns the Pope's words and whatever. So here I was thinking, like, every book we sell, they were going to have to, like, give them a percentage. So once I, like, sent them everything and said who we were and how many people were, like, in our organization, I get this message back saying, okay, just give us 100 euro and 2 copies of your book. And I'm like, it pays to be little, right? Like, St. Therese is my patron, and it pays to be little because it felt like he was just going, okay, sweetheart. Sorry. But no, it's been so beautiful and such a work of grace and such a work of God. And I know that Stephanie was saying that you guys have 3. Did you know in Lafayette they have 5 groups? Lafayette, Louisiana. So, so y'all got some competition there. But no, so it's just been spreading, and we've got the leader couple training, like, online. So we now have over 75 leader couples trained or in training in 23 states across the U.S., as well as 8 countries now. And in this next training coming up, the rule is going back to Poland. So we have a couple in Poland who are being trained to do this. So what the beautiful thing is that what we hear back from everybody who begins to follow the rule is this: I had no idea this level of joy and this level of love was possible. Even in our own marriage, like, by all accounts, by all standards, Peter and I had a great marriage. We're, like, we're intentionally communicating, working on our marriage, giving marriage talks, running the pre-Cana, the marriage prep days, like, helping him with the marriage ministry in the diocese. And yet, when we started doing this, God, like, it was like taking a boost. We, like, leveled up in our spiritual life, and it just individually and together.
No, and so we've constantly been asking, what is it about these married couple groups that are making such deep changes? So we just had a married couple group start, like, their first meeting. They said they had deeper conversations with these couples than they had ever had before. People were immediately becoming vulnerable, sharing the difficulties, sharing the joys. And then after that, they said it was as if somebody, like, gave us a steroid boost to our marriage, because everything was better after that. So the question that we're going to answer, at least the way that we see it, why does this little group of 4 couples gathering, following this rule, why does that change things? And we would say that it's the genius of JP2 to understand who the human person is. And that's what he gets right. And we live in a culture that does not understand clearly who the human person is. And so when we're face-to-face with who we're, like, the reality of who we're meant to be, it resonates. And it all of a sudden, it makes life more meaningful. And so the idea that JP2 has is that we are all created in God's image and likeness. Every single one of us was created to be an image of God to the world. We know God now to be Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He's a trinity of persons. It's a communion of persons. That's who we are. And so when we come together with other people and we share our lives with them and we become vulnerable and we give ourselves to them as a gift by being vulnerable, by praying for them, by encouraging, supporting them, all of a sudden our lives are more meaningful, and then those around us, the same thing. So because JP2 understood the human person so well, he knew that putting couples together in this setting, allowing them to understand what marriage is, allowing them to experience this gift of self, this communion of persons, would help them to be more joyful. Because the more we become who we're meant to be, the happier we are. St. Catherine of Siena said that you would set the world on fire if you became who you were meant to be. And that's what we're seeing in just one reading. It's beautiful to see these couples and how they're experiencing real life, because we live in a world that the opposite is the case, right? It's telling us that, oh no, you'll be fine on your own. Just get yourself a social media account and get friends, but you don't have to actually interact. Nobody will hold you accountable. You don't need them. You're fine on your own. But what do we see in the world? We see high suicide rate. We see drug abuse, sex abuse. We see all sorts of ways that people are trying to cope with this loneliness. And are they happy because they've done what the world tells them to do and they've gathered all their things? No, they're more unhappy than they've ever been. So JP2 recognized, no, in order to build people up, we have to understand who they are.
And I'm actually just started a PhD program because I'm not busy enough. But to go into this very thing, what surprised me was, you know how we think of ourselves, like our own self-concept of who we are, almost in an autonomous way, like pull yourself up from your bootstraps, you know. That self-concept only came about in the last century. Before that, people explained who they were by saying, I am the son of, right? Or I am the daughter of, or I am the wife or husband to, or I hail from, you know, like where they're from. Like who they were was always connected. It was I am you, I am us. Like, and only now have we like shut that off. And JP2 says that it's like a disintegration of our self-gift. It's a disintegration of our personhood. And so, like a shattered mirror that can't really reflect anything because it's all cracked, right? And so what we do when we enter in, and like not even knowing it, when we're in these groups and we're doing them, we use a dialogue process to discuss things with our spouse too, and it gets down to that level of you're not trying to figure them out, you're not trying to use them, you're just trying to understand and love. And at that level of personhood, we like reintegrate ourselves into that whole shiny mirror so we can better image God's life and love in ourselves. And another thing for me going into studies too that was remarkable is that we talk about like so self-gift, self-giving love is different than lust, right? Where you're like trying to take and, you know, people can objectify, sexually objectify each other. I didn't realize there was another way to objectify yourself. And for me, like the recognition that when we try to fit a certain like body type, or when I look in the mirror or whatever and you're like, oh, you know, like in the morning, whatever. Once you start distancing yourself or trying to like conquer your body through exercise or diet or whatnot, you are objectifying it rather than trying to find your health because you love the gift that God gave you. Because we can't be a gift. I can't give myself as a gift to Peter if I don't believe that all of who I am is a gift from God. Right? So like there's so many little ways that we fracture and give into that fracturing. And this is a tool that you don't even realize what's happening and we're stepping into this beautiful reintegrating and making our lives whole again in this image of God. One thing JP2 said also, it's as if we've been given wings and we use them to sweep the streets. And so just following his rule, doing these little things, taking time to be with other people at that level of understanding and loving allows us to learn to fly spiritually.
And so the community gathering that we have monthly is meant to be an opportunity for all of us to recognize the gift of the other and then to offer ourselves as a gift. So obviously we're bringing food and we're sharing our time, but that another thing that JP2, the genius that he had, was that he also saw these little married couple groups as being a seminary for marriage. And so we gather our families together so that our kids will be able to see all of their friends, parents together, and they'll start to learn marriage by osmosis. They'll start to see that this is how faithful families gather. We have a meal, we pray together, we talk about marriage, we support one another, because inevitably there's going to be struggles that happen in our community, and then the kids start to see that, oh no, it's our responsibility to help the others. And so they become more other-centered than self-centered. So I had this vision. Actually, it was I wanted to pull out the first reading. If y'all read the readings today, just this idea that, you know, we live in this culture that clearly is anti-life, anti-family, and then it's opposed to the idea of being a gift to others, because the world tells us that no, we need to gather for ourselves. And the others are, if anything, they're more of a threat or an enemy, so stay away from them. 6 feet apart would be nice. So that they don't harm us, right? And what does that do to us? It makes us feel as though we're an object. And for JP2, that's actually the opposite of love, is use. If anyone has ever used, it's as if they're being hated. This is the worst kind of treatment a person can have. So, this small community gathering, our married couple groups, it's a way for us to counter the world that we live in by showing love to those around us and by growing our family up in love so that when they are at the age of dating, or at whatever service to the world that they're going to offer, they recognize that people aren't just objects that get in my way or that I need to maneuver so that I can make it up the ladder, but they're meant to be loved. And so it's like a very JP2 revolution to counter the way of the world. And it says it, you know, JP2, obviously, the thing is we've been doing this for 4 years officially, almost five, and we just keep thinking, he must have had all of this in mind, because we're already seeing the growth that's taking place, and then in all of our areas, there are these community gatherings, and we keep thinking, I can't wait till the kids grow up and they get married and they start, and then to see the world that they are able to bring Christ into, it's going to be exciting. And again, the mission statement that we have for our organization is that we're trusting the rule. Because we almost set it aside. If it wasn't for the Holy Spirit, we may never have written the book, we may never have actually done a married couple group, but we knew that.
Because we did set it aside like 4 different times.
Because we thought we thought God would bring someone more qualified. We honestly, every time we thought of it, we're like, yeah, but it's just us. What do we know? We've never created a nonprofit. We've never written a book. Well, Teresa had it. But anyway, obviously God has a sense of humor, but it is a beautiful thing to see that this simple rule can help reorient us to appreciate who we are and then appreciate those around us for who they are. As we recognize this gift that Christ is in us, that we're created in God's image, and that we shine forth His light, we take that more seriously. And then I wanted to share too, I'll let you do it, the idea of our marriage and how it has a particular way of being united to God, besides just, so, I will let her, I want to hand it off nicely, it's not going so well. Obviously, every single one of us.
We're used to having two mics that interrupting each other.
It's true. Every single one of us has a relationship with God, right? A personal relationship. But in marriage, there is a unique relationship. And this is the central part of the rule that JP2 wrote, is deepening the understanding of how God is working in our marriage and growing in that as we learn.
So I also wanted to, so on the tables, there's also a flyer about the marriage retreat. Oh yeah, there's flyers for the WCI, but then the marriage retreat that we're going to do next month, here but not here, right? St. Francis Los Angeles. And that, you don't have to be in a married couple group to come to that. What we're going to do at that retreat is this, what Pete's talking about right now, and talk about this beautiful gift that we have. Everybody, you can see Christ in others, and you can be Christ to others, but through the grace of the sacrament of marriage, you have a particular and special avenue of being the hand of God in your spouse's life, and being able to learn to die to yourself, to be reborn in Christ, and reborn, this might sound weird, but in the heart of your spouse. And it's scary because this is talking about, like, dying to self. We hear that term a lot, die to self, you know. It can get, oh, but this is like an annihilation of everything that you want. Like, you'd be willing to put it all down, to lay it all down, to let yourself be completely obliterated for love of God and love of your spouse. And when you're willing to do that and let that go, you become that person that can fly. You become that person that does image God and has so much more joy and so much more. You're reborn into a beautiful gift. And honestly, like when we were doing this, about 3 years, and Gregory's going off to college. And he's like, well, I have to say, whatever you're doing with this rule thing, I think it's working. And you know, kids, you never know if, like, what they're going to say next is like going to be an insult or a compliment. Or even their compliments are like backhanded insults, right? But he's like, because I remember when you guys used to have tension and you used to have stress and then nobody wanted to say anything because y'all were all stressed at each other. And he's like, that hasn't happened in a long time. You're just like all happy and stuff. And I mean, we still have tension. But there's a level of unity, like even in our intimacy, in our conversations, in the just everyday life, that there's just more unitiveness and more joy. And then we were in a conversation with somebody else and we're like, I can't wait to see what God does next. And it's like then the next month there was another blasted thing that God brought out and brought us closer together. But also in the meantime, like, so your own personal relationship with God, we're probably talking to them, and your like conjugal spirituality is what JP2 calls it, this like new relationship that you have with the Holy Trinity when you become united in the grace of the sacrament of marriage, and they're like all intertwined together. So as you move forward in your conjugal spirituality, God does amazing things in your own personal life. So I don't know what our timing is.
We can keep it going. Well, we can catch you up.
I was just going to ask you.
Okay, work out.
Do we want to do small group?
Or questions? Or
do we want to ask questions? Or
people have questions, like especially the new people here.
Anyone else?
Yeah, or anybody else who's wondering about any of the terms that we've talked about, anything that, you know, you haven't wanted to ask your small group leader because you're just embarrassed and doesn't want to say. Can you give like bullet points? What are the rules? Or is that too big a question?
It is, yeah. So there's the book there. It's, yes, we could give bullet points, but the reality is that And that was, okay, I'll tell you a little story. So that was part of our hesitation, is that the rule itself, it's relatively small, and it's got some really big language. JP2 was, yeah, he was a very high intellectual man, and so it wasn't a real easy, like, okay, here's how you have a strong marriage. First do this, then do this.
When you wake up in the morning.
They were more or less kind of general ideas that needed to be in place. So I'll give you one simple one, that you follow the teachings of the church, right? So that they become a part of who you are. So it's not, you know, the story of the rich young man who said, oh yeah, no, I follow all those, and then Jesus says, well, I want you to sell everything. And then he walked away sad. Like, that's kind of the level JP2 is saying, is that I don't ask you to just check off the boxes. I want you to follow the teachings of the church so that it's a part of who you are. So you don't question, should I do this, should I not? It's just, you become so intimately united to the teachings of the church that it's just a part of who you are.
So one of the main things, though, is that both husband and wife have to be committed to be part of it. And it's just, and I think, you know, he wrote this after Humanae Vitae was promulgated, and I thought that that was going to be our biggest hang-up, that people would have issues with Humanae Vitae, but it turned out the biggest hang-up was, well, what if I want to do this and my husband doesn't, or vice versa? But, like, there's nothing you can do about that. Like, that's spiritual physics. Like, you are not going to grow in your conjugal spirituality unless both of you want to grow in your conjugal spirituality. So, sorry, you know? But we have widows and single people who come to our community gatherings up in Wisconsin. And so that's, you know, if people want to be a part of the growing community, they can, even if they can't be in the group. The other thing is that JP2 is not a micromanager, and this is not meant to be. He wants you to have to rework what the rules mean in every day in your marriage for yourself. He wants you to be completely free to choose that every day and not just be following a checklist, like he said, you know, but to truly be freely choosing, because he believes in human freedom above everything. And he believes that if you have the freedom, you would choose to do the right thing. And that we can only grow in holiness when it's completely our move. You know, God lays the grace out there, but it's got to be our move to make that decision.
I was just going to give an example. So the prerequisite that both husband and wife are together on the ideal, and they want to be a part of the married couple group. I'll just give you an example. So we do married couple retreats all around the nation, and we're doing a local one, and one of my colleagues said, Pete, what do I do to get my husband there? Can you call him? Can you tell him that he's got to go to this retreat? And I'm like, that would be fruitless. Like, he would go because of our friendship, but you would not grow at all, because he would just be checking off the box. He wouldn't be entering in. The two of you wouldn't be communicating deeply because his desire needs to be there. Yeah, I could get him to come, but that's not going to help you at all, because you want him to be there because he wants to strengthen his marriage.
And,
oh man, yeah, we've got, that's the beautiful thing about serving God's people, is that there's always fun stories. We were giving this was a smaller retreat. I think there may have been seven couples, and at the time, well, we still don't have a married retreat center, so I was renting an Airbnb, a big home, because it just felt more comfortable than a church hall.
Like a big cabin.
So we're in this living room, Teresa and I are giving a talk.
There's a couch, like, as far away as that table is to us.
And Okay. Obviously the wife wanted to go, but the husband was just there for the weekend. And he's like, yeah, I'll show, but I'm not going to... I don't even know if he was Catholic, to be honest with you. But while we're talking,
it's an intimate setting, right?
Like, I'm, honestly, we were closer than that table. he is taking a selfie with his wife, who's trying to pay attention. The poor wife was mortified because he, not only that, but then after he settled in, he took a little nap while we were talking. He just fell asleep right in front of us. And we're like, okay, this, I don't think this will last. I think they did make it through. No, they, I think they left early. But it's one of those things, like, JP2 recognized that
it takes you both.
Yeah, it's not going to grow unless the two of you have this desire together. Other questions? Please.
Or did you have somebody else?
No. Teresa started learning Polish. It's a very difficult language. She wants to continue learning, at least.
Yes, but for the translation, we hired somebody. But I know Italian, so I was more familiar then with, because the priest who gave us the Polish, he was one of the authors of the Italian book. So it was his translation that I was working from. So when our translator, some nuances of the words or whatnot, I'd be like, are you sure? Because he could have said it this way, and could have been, and she's like, oh, okay. Yeah, you could say it that way. Like, so I'm glad that I had that, like, double check, because she wasn't necessarily a theologian. She was just translating it, you know, from the footnote. So eventually, that is my hope. But for the time being, I'm reading all of JP2's stuff in English.
So, when you first got married, you had this general vision and dream to serve the church through marriage, married couples. How did that take shape over the years? You've already told us some of the details, but how defined was it when you got married? How many years did it take before it became more shapely? How did that look over time?
Well, I mean, he's still the director of Married to Family for the Diocese of Winona Rochester. That was one thing, the rule was given to us freely, so the WCI doesn't make much money. So everything and everybody who works with the WCI is all volunteers. So he will probably have to continue doing that. We had a vision, even when we were first studying, of like this desire to build and run a married couples retreat center and give retreats and give talks, but we didn't. But that never materialized. But working for the church did. And then slowly, but then when God gave us the rule in 2019, everything shifted.
When we were first married, we were studying in Rome. Our alma mater, University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, had a study abroad program. We were invited to give a talk there. I think that was our first talk as a married couple. So we did that. We would always take up any opportunities that we could. But then, when we got back to the States, we were having babies. After I finished my graduate degree, we moved to New Orleans, and we were the marriage prep coordinators for our parish. It was a volunteer position, but at least that got us into doing one-on-one marriage prep. So our job basically was to take in the couples and then kind of disseminate. We had four or five couples in the parish that would help prepare them. So we would do that, and then any opportunity that would arise, we would take it to give talks together. When I got the job full-time with the Diocese of Winona in Minnesota, we had hoped that we could work together, like, officially, but it never worked out. We just, that particular bishop didn't like the idea of having two married people working together. So,
in marriage and family.
And, whatever.
They thought we'd fight too much.
And as it is, he's Irish, and he told me straight up, he said, listen, if somebody were to attack my brother, they're attacking me. Now, I don't know if I want that in my chancery, so if somebody said to your wife, hey, I don't like what you wrote here, or whatever, then, anyway, I could see his side.
We have a different bishop now.
But the reality is, she came to everything with me anyway, because I'm not going to go to a married couple's retreat and be the only one talking. So we would work together regardless, and then I would always tell whether it was the parish or sometimes we'll do a pre-K at a Newman Center. I'll say, listen, if there's any kind of stipend, write it out to Teresa, because I don't need it, but she likes to have some recognition that, hey, you were here. We appreciate you.
Well, and then he's not supposed to get paid because he works for the diocese, right? So, but I know. Well, and it's just beautiful because God's timing is the best timing. And I was always like the more nerdy one who wanted to do more studies, who wanted to do this. And I was the one who got stuck. Like, for 15 years, I wasn't able to go further in my studies and do that. And so it was humble pie. I mean, I love my kids, and I don't regret that choice at all. But it's just beautiful to see, had I pushed my will, had I gone back to those institutes to try to finish there, I never would have ended up at Maryvale. And we never would have been handed the rule. You know, and it just... Yeah, looking back, you can see God's providence in all of it, and I just wish I could remember that, because, you know, you have those days, too, where you're like, oh, why isn't this working out, and to just remember to always trust and stay in that kind of, like, transcendent reality that God is always with us, always God with us.
Any other questions?
What countries are you visiting?
Ooh, so Australia was the first out of the U.S. And then this leader couple training, so we have couples in the United Kingdom. We have two there. New Zealand, Denmark, Austria, Hungary, Budapest, Hungary. I like saying that. And Krakow, Poland.
Over here, we had a question of how we met. A very good question. So I went to the University of St. Thomas because I liked that seminary over the one that's in Winona, and those were my two options. And I have a brother...
Because he went to high school seminary.
I have a brother that's a priest, and he's 4 years older than I, and my whole life everyone said, well, if he's going to the seminary, you should go. Then you'd have two priests in the family. And I didn't know at all what I wanted to do, and I really liked my brother. And so I didn't mind following him at all. So that's how I got to this university up in St. Paul. Teresa, did we continue? Teresa, her parents belong to a Christian charismatic community called People of Praise, the branch up in Minneapolis, so the Twin Cities. They put on a summer camp for kids. And so Teresa went to that summer camp for like 9 years and got to know all these Minnesotans. And when it came to where am I going to go to college, she said, you know what, I think I want to go with my friends. And they were all going to go to the University of St. Thomas. So.
But we didn't actually meet. We shook it. It was definitely not love at first sight.
No.
because, I mean, he was a seminarian and I was not a chalice chipper. So I think I shook his hand and was like, whatever. And because we had this gathering of everybody who was going to study abroad, and it was my junior year, his super senior year. But I think the finer story is when we actually started liking each other. And it had to do with I yelled at him. Because it was so dumb, you guys. There was like seven guys and five ladies on this study abroad, okay? And I overheard some of the guys saying, Teresa and this other girl were fighting over Peter, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? What are we, 7 years old? Is seventh grade? Like, what? I am not going to deal with this. I mean, haven't we left it? So I was like, I have a bone to pick with you. And we went to, like, a little cafe near the university, and I was like, I'm sick and tired of people acting like they're in junior high. We are in college. Can't we be adults? And I just, like, laid into him, and yeah, I didn't know if he'd never talk to me again or what, but I was like, I can't handle this.
No, and the funny thing is that I fell in love with her at that moment. like the whole semester we were friends, because of that group of 12, we felt like we were the two more sane people, so we just became friends because they were some eccentric people in that group, so we hung out a lot. But then it was at that moment, and I was also like relieved because none of the drama had anything to do with me. I was in the middle of it, but I didn't start. I didn't start the rumor. I didn't even hear about it until now, so I didn't feel like I had to defend myself. But I was admiring this woman who loved herself so much that she wasn't going to put up with anyone's crap. And she demanded her dignity, and I was like, this is amazing. And then, at the end, I think she's like, why are you smirking?
I'm yelling at you.
I expected you to be upset. I said, I'm just amazed that you have this much courage and that our friendship is this close. Anyway, it was like a week later we were dating, and that's it. The rest is history. But it was, not love at first sight, and we're complete opposites. But.
Well, and then there's the other whole story where the first time he met my family down in New Orleans was actually the weekend he proposed. So, and I think you had met my dad once before then. And when he asked for my hand from my dad, he grilled me for like 2 or 3 hours on that Friday night, and then we were all waiting to go out for my sister's birthday. So then they finish talking, and he comes over, and we're like, what'd he say? And he's like, we have to finish the conversation in the morning.
No, we're good friends. I'm the only son-in-law he has left, so,
my sisters are both divorced.
The other marriages didn't work out, so I'm the favorite.
He's the favorite.
Favorite son-in-law. Any other questions? Sorry, we're taking up all of the time. We can obviously talk. So
y'all come back in a month, and we'll talk at you some more at the retreat. But no, so the retreat, it's called Two Souls United in Christ. And what it does is it's like a spiritual journey. And we share some bits. But what really matters at the retreat is you. You and your spouse. And that time that you spend together. And that time that you can enter in. And these retreats, I love them so much. And I love going with couples through them. Because it gives you a time to get away from the everyday normal. And enter in and experience that conjugal, that growing in that conjugal spirituality. Even if you've never been in a married couple group and not even read the book, it's okay. It's for anybody. And it's a wonderful experience. Did you want to say more about that?
Well, first, let's give Peter and Teresa a big round of applause. Thank you guys so much. Yes, so we are beyond the early bird special, so you have to pay full regular price, consider a donation. But we still have a few spots available. Those of you who are local, it is Tom Copa's Catering, so that's good enough reason to come as well. So please sign up, please, please, please. We have a few spots available. It's going to be worth it, guys. It's going to be really worth it. You heard a small snapshot tonight. If you want to get more, don't read the book. Come to the retreat, okay?
It's a Friday to Saturday, March 14th and 15th.
Yep, March 14th, 15th, Friday to Saturday. Just ask the Blessed Mother to figure out childcare if you need help with that, okay?
She always comes through.
Yep.